Blog Talk Radio.
Copeland sure could crank out some snappy tunes. I hope everybody got enjoyed that little toe tapper and everybody's all ready to go. Are you out there, Dan?
I am out there. I didn't know that Aaron Copeland wrote the theme for American Masterpiece on PBS. That's really interesting. It's my joke. I know they just used it, but I forget the song. My son was in a he plays trombone and he was in all kinds of bands and. Their band played, I forget what the actual song is, but it's the theme to Monty Python's Flying Circus. And that's all I could think of. He kept telling me, no, Dad, it's this. And I'm like, no, that's the Monty Python. That's the Monty Python song. What are you thinking? So I loved that he played that. But that was a fantastic I love Aaron Copeland. That was a great pick by you, Bobby, today.
I figured it went well with our Americana theme for tonight. So I've been
absolutely.
Throwing out of town of artists that our audience for so long, I thought I'd bring it home before the holidays and have a couple of American artists out there to pick from. Although this one didn't seem to float too many boats this time. Oh well, you know, chicken today, feathers tomorrow. What the hell?
Yep. No, that's a great. It's a fantastic tune. One of my favorite Symphonic songs. They, being from Boston here, They actually play that a lot at the Boston Pops at the 4th of July. So I've heard that a few times there.
Oh, my God, Arthur Fiedler. I listened to him growing up.
Arthur Fiedler, yeah. I remember Arthur Fiedler. I actually have. So I collect all kinds of crazy antique stuff, and I found this really interesting poster, an original poster of Arthur Fiedler and the Boston Pops, who actually played at, this is going to be crazy Boston history, but hey, Lulu, you's on the board. Just want to say that, and Robbie's on the board. Hey, guys. I found this bunch of them, like 10 or 15 of these original posters at Faneuil Hall in Boston back in like the, I don't know what it was, 1960-something, when they kind of, they closed it and they rebuilt it a little bit and came back, mm-hmm. and Arthur Fiedler and Boston Pops played. And I actually sold one of them to the Symphony Hall at Boston. So if you go to Symphony Hall in Boston, yeah, I did. I just was selling. I still have like four or five of them, and I sold them on eBay, and one guy bought them. If you go to Symphony Hall in Boston, it's last time I was there, it was actually in the lobby, hanging out.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my little Arthur Fiedler connection. Never seen him. I did almost meet John Williams though. I'll refrain one little second, then we'll get on to our show. But since we're talking about American composers, I know. Real quick. So I was I've seen John Williams a couple of times here at Symphony Hall playing his stuff, and I was with my son, and he was standing, I found out where he was going to come in. There's a couple of people standing. I was like, oh, we can meet him. So we're standing right there, and we were right, so he got out, he got out, and the door was literally like 1 foot from me when he got it. He was right there. As soon as he came out, he got mobbed. Like, there was people, I'm not even kidding, with records about an inch and a half from his face. I honestly was scared for the guy. I mean, he was in his 80. He was like 80 at the time. And I'm like, so I literally went from trying to like meet him to literally pushing people away and doing security for him. I'm not kidding. Like, I was really worried for the guy. So instead of trying to get near him, I'm like, guys, give him some room, the poor guy, you know? That's my deal. You know, so anyway,
that says a lot. That says a lot for what people think of, film soundtracks. They realize now the importance of a good film soundtrack and how much it enhances. And I will take one little bit here. I've been indulging in a guilty pleasure for the last 2 weeks, watching all the appendices, both sets of trilogies for The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. I've been watching all extra stuff, the backstories and everything. And, oh, my God, I've been having a great time. But one thing I really was impressed, Howard Shore took the soundtrack for The Lord of the Rings and wrote a symphony. He orchestrated for a symphony. It's beautiful. You get a chance to listen to it.
Yeah, Howard Shore's great. I mean, John Williams is one of my favorite composers of all time. I have a ton of his stuff. I mean, I got, you know, all kinds of crazy rock and roll and all stuff on there, but I got John Williams all over the place. I love him. I think he's one of the greatest composers ever, to be honest. I mean, he takes stuff to a whole new level.
There's a posse of them. There's a posse of them out there. John Williams.
Oh, yeah.
John Barry, Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer's good, yeah.
Or Shore. And if you want to get historic, Miklos Rosa.
Ah. Yeah, there's a ton of them. Those guys are great. Even in
The soundtracks for the classics from the 50s and 60s, Ben Hur. The soundtrack from Ben Hur is Miklos Rosa. So anyway, enough of that nonsense. Can I advertise now?
Of course.
I want to toot my own horn. I want to pound my own drum. I want to say that it's finally happened. I am in print. I'm out there.
Congratulations.
Oh, we got somebody in the background. Who we got?
Lou.
Hey, hi.
Hi. Congratulations, Bobby. That's fabulous.
Thank you. I'm pretty excited about it. I think I already sold one or two. I think that my friends are trying to be supportive. But, it's called Ordinary Magic, Everyday Miracles. There's some diamonds in there, and there's a few rhinestones, too, but that's okay. You can't hit it out of the park every time.
Bobby, I'm going to say, In my hand right now, I am holding your book. Oh, I ordered it, and it came today. And it came today, so I didn't read the whole thing, but I read some of it, and I will give you a prompt, too. It was very, very interesting. It was fantastic. There's all kinds of nostalgia stuff here. The first, like, look at the table of contents. The first, you know, bunch of them are really about her grandmother. But there's haikus in here. There's poems that are philosophical. It is a great collection, and everybody should go get like 50 copies and give them to everybody for Christmas. Because, like I said, I am seriously holding it right now. I got it today, and I'm very excited to continue reading it. So, fantastic.
They'll make lovely stocking stuffers.
It's a great collection of poetry. It's got lots of variety in there, and yes, it is fantastic.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And Pee-wee says we got ekphrasis. Pee-wee says we got ekphrasis giveaway prizes now. That's right.
Yeah, win a prize. Yeah, get a Cupid doll and a book.
Exactly. All right, but we got a lot going on here. We got Robbie and Pee-wee on the board. We got Louie here. I think Pam is behind the scenes. She'll speak up if she's not. So we got lots of crazy stuff going on.
We got some pretty interesting pieces out there too. And I'll say a few words about the poet for tonight. We have, or I'm not saying my poet for tonight. I'm okay. Worlds are wrong. The artist for tonight is on the wrong path. I'm trying to. I've sabotaged myself. Here we go. Okay. The American Regionalism of Thomas Hart Benton, and a couple of Thomas Hart Benton fans came out of the woodwork and dropped some. JT dropped a couple of comments on there. But anyway. He's done murals all over the place. He's very, very Americana. And I couldn't get the titles to all of the pieces. So rather than do it scattershot, I didn't put any titles in. But if you look out there, some of them you can find the titles to. And there's all kinds of regional stuff. The South, the Midwest, the West, the East. You can see there was some Western stuff in there, some farming stuff, also industrial stuff. There's one that's called steel, one's called ships. It's some really it's highly stylized, but it's some really gorgeous stuff, and definitely American. It's soaked with atmosphere from America. So with that in line. I didn't cherry pick. I just threw a whole shit ton of them out there and have people have a good time. If nothing else, they had fun looking at them. So let's get started.
Absolutely. The technical term, a shit ton, right?
Yeah, it's the unit of measure. We engineers like it. It's something larger than a hockey locker.
Exactly. All right. I'm going to crank along here. So first poem we have is by Peter Solway called Rubens of the Westerns. And Lou is our special guest star here. If you wouldn't mind giving that a first read, that would be great.
It would be my honor. Fabulous poet. Rubens of the Westerns by Peter Solway. Stamp boot suit, all the Marxist gang. Mural and posted gallery, out of the weather, up from the street, Saturday night, send me some mail, black and white, tough farmers, shapely wives, religion of doing, harvest and dancing, old turnip chopping cannon, cold and sober, lonely in the front of fire, action-packed adventure, television, a full picture, Thomas Hart Benton, superseded by Jap product, Chinese imports, Pollock doing the drip, lace maker of liberal comments, Dolly a wanker, Warhol a fairy, oh, what a delightful decor. So regional, communal, bar some hunch, moonshiner starving off, frostbite, an artist of the sporting people who posed in overalls, Madonnas and tight tops, his studio casting couch in Big Apple. End poem.
Sorry, I was mutating. Excellent, excellent read. You read that with lots of vigor, just like the poem was written. And Bobby, in honor of your book, you get to be the first commenter tonight.
Well, I noticed, God bless Peter Solway. He is, if nothing else, consistent, as he was wont to do when I was working with Neutron Bomb. Anytime he'd write an entry for our contest, he would never put the prompt in. And bless his heart, he didn't do it in this one either. God bless you, Peter. You're nothing else if not predictably consistent. But actually, what he's written here, it almost sounds like he's harvested the whole the panoply of prompts there, and just taking a little taste from each one. I mean, he's got Saturday night, sense of mail, tough farmers, shapely wives, religion of doing harvesting and dancing. He's really actually covered all the action-packed adventure. Television, misspelled. He's fuller picture. Huh. So he's talked about the Hollywood one there and the harvesting ones and some of the manufacturing. It's actually very comprehensive piece of writing. It's embraced the entire contest, which is quite an accomplishment. So well done, Peter.
Yes, absolutely. It's It's really interesting. I thought that the artist kind of he really captured the kind of the essence of that time of, you know, the 1800s kind of Midwest, and with all of his little slang and everything that Peter did here, I thought it was really interesting. Especially the title "Rubens of the Westerns," I thought was fun. Lou, you got to read it. What you think?
You know, the thing with this is it just kind of reminded me of like when you used to look at those, I don't know what they were called, but they were like glasses you looked through, and then you would put pictures in them, and they would sometimes move really fast if you get them in there. And that's what I thought. He caught like caption shots of everything. He would talk about one thing, what he saw, and then he would just expand it, which was just fantastic. It was like a balloon popping the head confetti in it, because each Saturday night, and then he would pop the confetti where he would talk about male, black and white, you know, the lifestyle and the shapely farmers, and then the religion. I would see another pop of that balloon with confetti, harvest, dance, turnip, chop it, kindling, cold and sober, lonely in front of fire. Just the images that he thought he would start out with one idea, and then it would just explode into other things that we know and would see and would understand what was going on, you know, like, you know, how Japanese products were coming. And then, of course, the Chinese imports overtook that because of the cheaper labor. And so, you know, I could just go on about each pair, you know, each stanza, but this was, it was fun, and it was fantastic.
Fun and fantastic. Yes, absolutely. That is what comes to mind. Excellent, excellent. We are going to crank along here. If I could only let us crank along. Where am I? I lost my – here we go. I have 50 different screens up because I try to have multiple things coming, and I lose myself sometimes on where I am.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah, this is always these shows are always way past my bedtime, so I'm usually I'm usually very tired even when we start. That's right. But we are going to continue on with one by Babbler, and Bobby, I'll let you read that one.
Slightly. Okay. Let me open this up, and we have Wild West Winds by Babbler. Harp strings in my back, whole like jerky, dried in the hot, torturous sun. I dance with the pitchfork, cutting down America's breads, swaying to and fro in time with soon-to-be-decapitated heads. Through the hills I tore this spring, sticking meated fingers in to the dark and peaty thing, pressing deep the tiny rounds, watered by April and mocked by May, rutted again these fertile grounds. Summer are coming that are drier yet. Summers are coming that are drier yet, and the top soils will be blown, making the barren land where once seeds were sown. Following western winds with aching belly and idle hands, picking pecks for pennies the way this living demands, the way that hunger and greed sucks on the jerky made by man. End poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Bobby. And I'm always a fan of Babbler's work and her show that she does. But I thought that – I'm glad that somebody did pick this one. I thought that a lot of the pictures that he wrote, the ones that struck me when I was looking at it were the ones about the farmers. And, you know, that is such a huge part of Americana, is the farmland. And I think that Babbler did a great job of romanticizing it as well as kind of showing the hard work. And I thought it was really interesting metaphor of harp strings in my back pull like jerky dried in the hot torturous sun. And then she ends with the way that hunger and greed sucks in the jerky made by man, and kind of almost saying that the you know, the way I'm getting is kind of like the muscles of the farmers are almost like that, you know, they're almost treating it like beef jerky, like just dry, like kind of dried out, overworn, overdone. And that's you know, it is back-breaking work. I mean, I was out today in my house with pulling ladders around and raking leaves for a few hours, and that's nothing compared to people doing 12, 14 hours on a farm, right? And I had to take a nap this afternoon. you know, it's back-breaking work, and it's picking for pennies, the way this living demands. I always I think about that sometimes when I'm in a sometimes with my work, they'll take us to – I don't really get to eat at fancy restaurants, you know, but sometimes at work they'll take us there and you know, they'll be, you know, $40 plates of food, and, you know, and I'll just be thinking about, you know, the quarter of a penny that this piece of broccoli that's on my food that the farmer got for that, or not even, you know. And these cooks are charging, you know, $40 a plate type of thing. You know, it's always those the lowest level workers that, you know, get paid the least, but they're the ones that are supplying everything. And I think farmers never get their say. So I thought this was great. I really like the rhyming, Babbler. You did an awesome job with that. So excellent, excellent. Luyu, what do you think?
I think Bobby did a fantastic job in reading Babbler's poem. You know, I sometimes get stuck on like one stanza. You know, I was just thinking where she was talking about how summers are coming that are drier yet, and the top soil will be blown, making barren the land where once seeds were grown. You know, the problem with this is because of over farming, and yes, this is hard labor. Yes, they don't get paid what they should. Yes, they feed America, and this is where we get our bread and buns and biscuits from, you know. But, you know, the thing is that when you overuse the land and you overfarm it, even the Jews did not overuse the land. They would just use it like every 7 years before they would toil it and farm somewhere else, because you take all the nutrients out of it. And I thought that she caught that so well. You know, this is so much different than the Native Americans who, you know, would move and they would plant, and it would allow the grounds to come back. And it says summers are, you know, coming yet, and the top soil will go on, making the barren land where the what seed were sown in. And, you know, and I thought she caught that wonderful. There's each stanza has something to say. And I enjoyed that, but I really enjoyed that stanza because of the farming.
Absolutely. It's a really good point. You know, so much over farming and overdone everything. It always makes me sick when I hear about all the clear cutting that's done. I mean, not as much in the United States, but, you know, I know the down in South America and different places, and we totally overuse the land. I agree. I mean, I think it's happened throughout history, you know, if I'm not wrong, and I usually am. you know, even in ancient Egypt, you know, some of it was you know, some of the land was overdone. That's not where the Sahara Desert came from, but, you know, even back then there's proof of them kind of using the land over and over again. You know, not everybody did that. I mean, even thousands of years ago, people realized that you had to kind of rotate a little bit and, you know, respect the land, right? But yeah, we definitely do that. And some of that is just the farmers trying to make a living. You know, they have to sell, you know, their crops, to make a living. And they just have to kind of keep going and keep going. And some of it is because of overpopulation that you just have to keep feeding people. So it's, you know, definitely a problem. Bobby, what's going on with you?
Hi, I'm listening to you folks talk about crop rotation. And I remember the first time I learned about that in school and depletion of the minerals in the soil. And I thought, what an amazing thing. And that people never doped to it, until technology started getting involved in farming. And interestingly enough, with the invention of the plow, the conditions for farming improved, and if you look at history and you look at anthropology, you will notice that when that happened, nutrition improved and the height and size of people increased. Yep. if you look at the suits of armor in castles, these guys were short. I mean, they were, because it was nutrition. And when nutrition improved, people's development improved. It's a fascinating thing, because just the type of plow blade and the way it and I think Jefferson had something to do with inventing a new plow blade also. But the artwork reminds you that we're all rooted in this. And if it weren't for the farmers and how hard they work, we would be pretty hard pressed to find something to eat. My grandmother was a farmer before she left Poland. They had orchards, fruit orchards, but that woman could stick a pencil in the ground and make it sprout. It's with some people, it's like a calling. It's a gift. They understand the soil. They respect it. If you want a really interesting film, I want to say it's Percy versus Goliath. I'll look it up and I'll post it on the chat board. But it's basically a story about a small farmer who used to save seeds to generations. And his father and they all saved seeds, and they all used the seeds that they saved from their own crops. Well, Monsanto ended up suing the guy because they thought he was pirating their seeds. And it's an amazing film. Christopher Walken was in it. It's a really interesting story about the small guy really trying to fight back the big corporate giant and actually gaining some ground. So I'll post it out there if you're interested in learning about how hard these farmers work and how sometimes they get screwed because of it. Anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it is interesting how we take the nutrients out of our food and then enrich it again, you know, all the time.
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense at all.
Because they resell it. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. They pull all the nutrients out and, you know, then you have to pay extra to have the nutrients put back in.
Which is
right,
why
like enriched,
I don't
right, like,
bread. Yeah. That's why I don't eat white bread or white rice. I make my own bread.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, excellent. You know, even with I have a kind of, you know, small yard. I live in a city, but I have a ton of trees around, and I don't rake all the leaves. And I got to be honest, the trees in my yard are pretty damn healthy. And there's this really nice old couple kind of across the street that, you know, perfectly manicured lawn. They do everything, and the tree in the front yard is dying because they kind of take away all the leaves. They take all the nutrients away. You know, in a city here, I don't think the trees are getting
when it breaks
what
down.
That's what the leaves are for. You know, we do things a lot backwards. But anyway, we have Amy Armundel is on the board as well, too. So we are
Board
heavy over here tonight. Pee-wee says he grew up on a farm. He knows all about it. All right, Pee-wee. We'll have to hear some stories about that. Anyway, let's crank along here. But, yeah, shout out to all the farmers. And I think, Lou, you said your uncle was a farmer in Arkansas, right?
Yeah, my Uncle Bob, corn, wheat, everything, everything you eat in the farm comes from the farm. You don't go to the grocery store.
No, and everything has a taste. That's what I like about
it. Oh, my
God,
it tastes so much better.
It tastes better.
It really does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah, it does.
Nectarines taste like nectarines and not like tennis balls.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't taste good.
No.
It's just so much better, from the farms. I love all the farm stands around here. I go wherever I can.
Delicious.
All right, cool. We have our one SoundCloud for tonight coming up next by Eric Svensson.
Of course.
Yeah. And if we could magically, I'm going to think really hard, and I bet you I can get that to play. Let's see what happens here.
Positive thinking.
That's right.
Gizms, gizms, and crew cut crop circles. Swivel, swish, swivel, swish. High noon's dish. Above, bluebirds duck and dive. Enthralled by happy Thanksgiving harvest hands. Passionate hearts below make hay while the sun shines. Circles in spirals, crop circles raked with Vivaldi verve. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to New York Island. From the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. Fluid salsa sway, no time for chasing man of La Mancha, wind nor dream down on the farm. Pivotal hips swivel, circles in a spiral. The rakes scoop up hay while the sun shines. Clear blue sky ribbons, fertile dreams, golden haze, sunshine beams. Away, away with Van Gogh's black crows over wheat fields. Doom, gloom, and falskin packs belong not in this land that is your land. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling, the voice came a chanting and the fog was lifting. This land was made for you and me. Schisms, isms, and crop circles. Down on the farm, pioneer spirit flourished. Early to bed, early to rise. Make hay while the sun shines. Red sun at night. Shepherd's delights, red sun in the morning, sailor's warning. Schisms, isms, and crew cut crop circles. Fluid salsa sway off kilter. Pivotal hips swivel, ball bearings falter. Contaminated farming circles worldwide spiral out of control. Redundant rakes quake under global warming. I roam, ramble, my footsteps falter. Circle in a viral spiral, backtrack. Sand burns as I search for meager diamond tenacity. All around me, a hollow coyote voices truncate. Beware Van Gogh's raven's roots and crows of a vanquished wheat fields worldwide. Memories may be beautiful, they sustain minds, but won't feed hungry bellies. Howls a lone wolf crier. High noon's dish, swivel swish, swivel swish, end poem.
Eric, you are the best. We really appreciate it. For some reason, I don't know why, I've heard Eric all the time. He's always in the shows. Every time I see that name, I always think it's somebody else. I don't know why. Every time I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Eric. Every single time. But I love his voice. He's one of those guys I could listen to talk all day. I'm really glad that I read this earlier today. And Bobby, you'd be proud of me. I've already commented on everything. Usually I have to get out on me, and I've already commented on everything.
You get an extra dessert tonight.
I appreciate it. I've already had it, but I'll have a third. How's that? I was really glad he brought Van Gogh on here. I actually think that this artist reminds me of Van Gogh, just kind of the shapes that he has and the curves. I was noticing on here everything is kind of in curves a lot. He's got a lot of that, which kind of reminds me of Van Gogh. I know Van Gogh is much different, but it's just that style. Every time I saw this, it just reminded me of him a little bit, and the way he kind of has the perspective as well too reminded me. So I was really glad that he had Van Gogh references in here. And this is the same one that Babbler wrote for, and another great tribute to the farmer. I really liked the end. You know, memories may be beautiful, they sustain minds, but won't feed hungry bellies. And that's, I think, the beauty of the farmer and why farmers and, you know, restaurateurs, everybody in food businesses needs to have more respect, because they do feed us. I mean, that's the basic things of life, right? The bricklayers and the carpenters and the people who feed us. I mean, that's, you know, something I think we take for granted. Some of our lower paying people in the United States are the ones that house us and feed us, unfortunately. But I thought this was great. And I really like the word schisms in here as well, too, because I think there is a definite a different, separation sometimes for the, you know, the workers and the owners and so forth. So I thought it was really, really interesting. And beautifully done, beautifully read, as always, by Eric. Awesome, awesome job. Lulu, I'm always happy to hear your voice. What'd you say?
Thank you. You know, I was just thinking about what you were saying about Van Gogh. You know, to me, Van Gogh was just this person that reflected outwardly so much darkness, but in his artwork, there was a light into the darkness, and that's what I enjoyed about your comment, because I went back and looked at the picture and looked at it. You know, the toil and the amount of work that it takes to be a farmer. I also liked what he brought out, how, you know, the overuse of land is death for all of us, because it can grow anything, you know. And eventually when you kill the land, people starve. And, you know, even though there is beauty in the work and the swaying wheat field, like, you know, my uncle, I worked on his, my uncle Bob, that's what's his name, Bob. And I worked on his farm, and I really liked this stanza, schisms, isms, and crop circles. Down on the farm, pioneer spirit flourished, early to bed, early to write, make hay while the sun shines, red sun at night, shepherds delight, red sun in the morning, sailors warning. You know, he puts such different twists to the meaning of what he's writing about, which, you know, I enjoy. You know, I could just see myself on his tractor, and you can smell the earth, the richness of the earth, and a little bit of the dust that would, you know, come up, and, you know, getting up early in the morning, you know, because you can hear all the roosters and chickens. You're going to wake up anyway. And just seeing, you know, going out in the sun and how delightful it was to, you know, come in and eat homemade food at night. And, of course, this is a different meaning for Sailor's Warning. And, you know, that's what he put, cleverly put in each stanza, a a positive and a negative, which made it thoroughly enjoyable, especially listening to him read. Fantastic poem, Eric.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much. And Pee-wee, who said before he grew up on a farm, also said he was a bricklayer after school. So all kinds of respect to Pee-wee, and I bet you he didn't get paid much for either of them, right, Pee-wee? So, but shout out of respect for
and I work
jobs.
For free.
Telling
bed
you,
and food.
Yep, exactly, exactly. Yeah, I actually love physical work, and I could see where you're saying that. I just always have. I have an office. I'm a manager. I have an office job, and I make myself do physical things every day just because I literally can't sit. I just can't do it. So it's tough for me. So I'm up and down. I've already been standing up and sitting like 6 times since we've been doing this thing here. So, you know, I have all respect, but it always, to me, those jobs are very romanticized, you know. When I went out of college, one of my best friends, best man at my wedding, actually, was a carpenter. He owned his own business. And I just remember the first time I painted a house with him, he sat back and he says, "This is why I do this." He said, "I can sit there and look at what I did and say, that was a good day's work." You know, he was just looking at the house that he painted. He could see the work that he did. And I think about that all the time. This is 35 years ago. You know, I think about it all the time. Sometimes I sit here and, you know, as a manager just in a computer, I walk away and go, "What the hell did I do today?" Like the whole day goes by and I'm like, "I'm not really sure what I did." And, you know, he can see what he actually did. And that's the way it is with farmers, with everybody. Anyway, Amy said, "Really great poem. I love the recurring motifs like fluid salsa sway." Right on, Amy. Excellent. So, excellent, excellent, guys. Speaking of Amy, A.R. Mundell, I am going to put her poem up. And we're going to go right to her since she's on the board here.
Do I get to read it?
I think it yes, sure. I would love it if you read it. Go nuts.
Me, pick me, pick me, pick me, pick
me.
Me.
Now, ladies, don't fight.
All righty.
Yes, go for it.
Here she is. Okay. And paved bones. This is the only one I noticed that is rather grim, the only piece of artwork I thought was, and I was wondering if someone would grab it and do something with it, and I was glad to see that Amy had chosen this piece because it's very different from all of his other work, and I deliberately put it in there because of that. So we have paved bones. New growth grows from yesteryear to life, the flowers blooming through the skulls of those fallen to strife. The lands as layered as the earth, piled high with long-gone reefs or bones crushed in obscurity with long-forgotten grief. The rolling hills hide wartime. The stalks sway whispered tears as the sun burns clear again. It hides those distant fears. The fields are tilled with fallen blood. The trees have seen such death. Yet every day their fronds grow green in spite of those bereft. The mountains have seen climbers fall. The shores have seen shipwrecked souls. And long the bees and ants have crawled on spines and skulls of old. The beauty stems with fights forget as descendants live by peace. And soon the bones which paved the way are lost to soil's bequeath.
And poem. Excellent, excellent. And her office notes say, "The image reminded me a lot of the pioneer days, like all the lives lost on the Oregon Trail and especially among Native Americans and the wars, and how America has grown into what it is out of the seeds of by those deaths." And also true, you know, not only the deaths of the pioneers, but obviously of the Native Americans that we came and basically took the country from. I forget who I saw today said, you know, there's only two types of people in the United States, Native Americans or immigrants. That is it. And it is true. And, you know, we you know, in general, we basically, you know, took over the country, as unfortunately has happened all throughout history in lots of different countries. I mean, what's going on in, you know, Russia and Ukraine right now, right? It never seems to stop. So this was really an interesting take on that, and I'm glad that she saw that in the Americana, you know, the you know, how much of the country and everything that we have here was built on blood and sweat and tears and everything that had happened. You know, all the wars that we had, the Civil War, everything that has come to build the country that we have. You know, the mountains have seen climbers fall, the shores seen shipwrecked souls, and long the bees and ants have crawled on spines and skulls of old. How amazing is that stanza? And it isn't just the, you know, what she was talking about with the Native Americans and all that, but it's also just the, like I said, the pioneers, the people who are trying to find the country and move around. And it is really interesting that the, you know, all of that is gone. All of those people are gone. They're generations ago. That we don't, you know, we just have to read about and hopefully still understand. So, you know, really interesting. And, yeah, you know, so certainly I think, you know, two of our biggest shames, which we got to put in our past and, you know, learn from, and hopefully get better in the future is, you know, is slavery and, you know, what we did to Native Americans, instead of trying to assimilate in. So I thought that was, you know, really, really well written. And Luyu, I'm sure you have obviously some comments on that.
Yeah. What I really loved was when I saw that Amy wrote, "The mountains have seen climbers fall." No, wrong. Wait. Yes. "The fields are filled with fallen blood and trees have seen such death, yet every day their fawns grow green in spite of those for it." You know, and then it was also, you know, "The mountains have seen climbers fall, the shores seen shipwrecked souls, and long the bees and ants have crawled on spines and skulls of old." And when I read that, that automatically took me back to the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma, where they had just over-farmed, you know, no respect for Mother Earth. And this is what happened. You know, they over-farmed the prairie grasses, and then what was left, the cows were eating it, which caused, you know, environmental damage. And, of course, you know, it just all what ended up happening was that the over-farmed land, the overgrazed land began to blow away just billowing clouds of dust. And this just reminded me of, you know, how so much of the, you know, the hunger, and, you know, I can imagine, you know, some had died before they could move out. And that's what it reminded me of, because then there's no ants, you know, there's nothing left, there's no bees. And all you have is a dust bowl. I mean, and nobody can live on that. And this is what happens when we do not respect. I thought this was an awesome poem. I love the picture she picked, and I also love the poem that she wrote.
Yes, you know, I've always argued that, you know, we need to respect nature because we are nature. If you want to be if we have to be selfish about it, we ourselves are nature. You know, we shouldn't be selfish about it. Obviously, we need to live in harmony with everything, and we can totally do it. There's a middle ground with this, and we just need to find it. There's middle grounds with everything. This is going to sound completely off topic, but. One of the reasons I like the show Star Trek is because if you do watch Trek, the future is good. They've found, you know what I mean?
Yes.
How many science fiction shows, the future is this, you know, it's a warning against an apocalypse, right? It's a warning to what we can do. But in Star Trek, if you see Star Trek on Earth, everything's great. Everybody's happy. The Earth is good. There's a balance. Like, we've actually done really well. And I always thought... that was fantastic for a science fiction show, you know, to really have a positive outlook. So I totally do not think it is too late. We've certainly done damage, and it's going to take generations to get rid of it, but I don't think it's too late. I think we can fix it, and we just have to, be smart and come together. So I agree with you, Lou, absolutely. And I can talk about this for about 20 years, so I will stop. And I will go to Bobby. But before I do, I think we have another guest star.
Ha ha! Let him in, let him in.
Do we have somebody?
I think Frank.
I know. Not
Frank was there. Frank, there you are.
Hello.
There he is.
Hey, Frank.
It's the Frank.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm I reach a store yet, Daniel, but I do accept a compliment at least.
Gotcha. There you go. Thanks for coming on, Frank. And where is Kirk? I don't know where Kirk is. I wish we had him. I'm sorry. I'm all kind of sidestepping. So I go to Comic Cons all the time, and I've done it. You know, I love going to them. And my son and I have a little running joke that we've almost met William Shatner like 7 times. Because every time we go and he's there, the first time I ever went, he shut down a whole floor and we couldn't find food and it was a disaster. So every time I go to a Comic Con now, besides the fact that he's like $70 and I guess he doesn't really talk to people, we always walk up to his line and go, "Do you want to go see William Shatner?" We go, "Nah," and we walk away. Like we've done that like 7 times. So instead of saying we've met him, we say we've almost met him like 100 times. It's just like a running gag. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm totally rambling on today. Frank, did you get to hear or read the poem?
No, unfortunately, it was not. I was dialing in at the moment. I was not able to hear the poem, but I did hear the comments there, and I do have to say that the poetess in this case is always remarkable in her emotions and her metaphors and her expressions. So even though I didn't get a chance to hear the poem, I'm familiarized with her poetry. Outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. She just said on the board, I actually got really inspired by this contest and had a hard time picking which poem to put in the contest. Well, to quote Bobby, we're glad you picked this one. It was a different one from the rest of them. Bobby, I don't think you got to comment. You read it beautifully, but didn't really get to comment on it.
No, that's all right. I understand what you mean about William Shatner. He never calls, he never writes. That was
exactly.
you should have said that, Bobby. You should have said, "Bay me up. Bay me
right.
up, Scotty."
No, thank you. Now, when I read this one, I was very struck by it. First off, from a technical point of view, the rhyme pattern and the rhythm and the terminology. I mean, the language she uses. She's a great youth vocabulary. She's exercised assonance beautifully, especially in this last two or three. Stanzas where she's got the fields are tilled with fallen blood, the trees have seen such death, yet every day the fronds grow green in spite of those bereft. And she's got souls and old and peace and bequeath. Beautiful, beautiful assonance, nicely done. The whole thing has a very melodic cadence to it. The content, the way she's her interpretation of this particular prompt, I thought was inspired. I mean, she has taken some detail out of this and really built on it, just from the flowers growing out of the skull and the broken tree branch and the sky in the background. She's built a great, she's done some great storytelling here, along with, like Frank said, some very expertly, skillfully written metaphor. And this is just, I think, a stellar piece, one of her best.
Yes, and you were very excited about it. You actually texted me earlier, said you got to read this one that went on here. And, I was blown away. They're all fantastic. It was a pleasure to read everything. Thank you, Bobby. Absolutely. And, Frank, in honor of your visit here, I'm actually going to put yours up. Frank threw one on the board. And we're going to get him to read. So I just put it up there, Frank, if you don't mind. That would be great.
Yes, can I just explain a little bit of the poem The poem sure. was actually, it's a pre-write, but, and it's the prompt, when I saw the prompt here, I had to find this poem here, you know. This is an actual poem that was inspired by those who don't know the true story of Solomon Northup. He was a free black man from upstate New York that was abducted and sold into slavery in the early, I believe it's the 1840s, or no, actually 1820s around there. And he was enslaved for so many years. So they did a film on him. I'm sure if anyone is acquainted with his film, I would suggest it if not. There's a poem called Waltz of Freedom, so it goes like this. And it was written years ago, but it was inspired by that particular storyline and his personal story. The new wildflowers, bright and lovely, swathe a meadow with a fresh smell, upon a green of sundry stalks comely, as a rakish butterfly straightway swell. Neither rows of cotton before the barn, like a field of willow trees that pry thither, beside the wariness of the ferns that warn, wince, I drudged as a laden slave hither. The fain sparrows chirp and roost slowly, amidst those crows by the gambrel roof, as my dreadful scars are healing slowly, though my days of thraldom are aloof. Over gloomy willows that often mar, wandering clouds of the bluish skies, upon a rainbow that once seemed afar, when the glow of the morrow blessed my eyes. I shall not heed the wrath of lashes upon my body throughout the night, whilst I walk soon through marshes as a free man uplifted within the light. My fingers were now bare wounds found, drenched in my pouring sweat and blood, as shackles bonded me to the ground amidst harsh waters of the rising flood. I hear the strings of a violin playing those mournful songs of yesterday, which soothed my soul before longing for my wretched sorrow to go away. 'Tis the old lute of the waltz of freedom that my ears listen within such glee, for I am born anew with much wisdom, for fate had finally set me free. End of poem.
Excellent, Frank. Yeah, I think if it picks that picture perfectly. And the movie was the best picture, I believe, 12 Years a Slave,
yes.
Which was a great, great movie. There's also another movie, if no one's ever seen it, a little bit more obscure, but it's a movie, Amistad, which I think is a really
yes.
great movie. It's about, have you ever seen that one? It's about a slave ship that comes over and gets,
yeah.
and there's a whole legal battle and everything with it. It was directed by Spielberg. It's a great movie.
Yeah, they were finally freed. They were finally freed and liberated. And yeah, I do recall that film as well. But I was inspired.
Yeah,
I was inspired by that particular story. You know, I don't want to get too much in the film because a film is a film. You know, it has an adapted version. But I did some research onto the storyline. I found it very moving. So this is what, when I wrote this original poem and I saw this prompt, I selected this one because it was so convincing to this particular personal story. It could have been him, or it could have been another person, another former slave, but I chose this one because I felt it was befitting for tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, talk about a harsh life, right? I mean, the life of a slave, where you don't know if you're going to get beat to death the next day, where you're literally just working for your supper. That's the only thing you're getting, you know, and working extremely hard, just so you can you know, still have your be with your, you know, hopefully some of them were with families, a lot of them weren't. And I thought this was great, Frank. I thought this was a really beautiful, like I could see this person in the picture. So I thought it fit perfectly. And I could see the person in the picture saying these words and thinking of this. And the reason Amistad came to me, I just went, as the shackles bond me to the ground, amidst hushed waters of the rising flood. You know, there were scenes in there when everyone was in the Amistad boat and, you know, the people on the boat, the slave owners that were bringing them over, you know, they weren't concerned with anybody's health. They were like, as long as a certain percentage came by, like they were just, you know, cattle or commodities. you know, it's unbelievable to me how anybody can treat another person horribly. And it's, you know, as much as slavery isn't in the United States anymore, there's still people that treat people just as bad, you know, all over the world and in the United States, and it's unbelievable to me how that actually can happen. But I thought this is really beautiful. I could really feel the character, you know, singing this song almost. To me, it was like a song, Frank, that he was singing in his head, and it was really, really well done. So, yeah, excellent. This is great. I'm really glad that you put this on.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Of course. Let's go to Lou. What'd you think?
I just thought this was fantastic, you know, because I couldn't stop crying when I saw the movie and read the book, you know, being a professional violinist and a farmer, and then he decided to travel, and of course he traveled to where there was slavery, where, as Francisco brought out, where he was dragged and kidnapped and sold as a slave for 12 years. You know, right here where it says, "Kiss the old lilt of the waltz of freedom," you know, because he understood what freedom was, because he lived as a free man with his family and a home. And, you know, I can, to not give up that hope, that hopefully, you know, after 12 years of being just beat and watching other people being just beat in the chaining and the whipping and it just, the raping of the women, it makes me sick. It literally makes me sick. But, you know, as he was brought out that, I love where he says, I am born anew with much wisdom, you know, to understand what it was to be a slave, what it was to be free. And then at the end where he says, "For fate has finally set me free," when he got a friend to contact his family, you know, where they provided aid for, you know, the slaves that were being, you know, they knew that they were being kidnapped, and, you know, to gain his freedom. And I just thought this was beautifully pinned, Frank.
I appreciate that.
Excellent.
Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely, Lulu, I agree. And, yeah, that stuff is always, you know, I a different subject, but whenever I watch Schindler's List, I literally tear up at the end of it. Some of it is because mm-hmm. of the great score by John Williams that we talked about earlier, but just the movie itself, I mean, when you see those things, because it's a horrible, you know, it's a horrible story, but it's real. Like, it really happened, you know? And,
yeah.
And you watch a movie like Dances with Wolves, you know, which is a, you know,
yes.
a made-up story,
that.
But those things happened. Mm. And it is very sad.
I grew up with Roots. I think all of us were familiarized with that
yep.
series there.
Yep.
That was one of those first series that I actually got to realize what it was for the poor slaves, unfortunately, during that epoch, that time period. You know, and this also came to mind there. But I just wanted to share this poem tonight, and I know that America is much more than this, but its history was... fortunate with a touch to this as well. So this was something that I thought not to be controversial in that sense, but I just wanted to bring the expression of this man's face with this poem that I had written. I thought it was just good for this tonight.
Hey, it's important, you know. You know, speaking when I think of Schindler's List, I always say it's important that these movies keep going, because you can't forget
yeah.
that happened, so it doesn't happen again. The same thing
yeah.
with slavery and with genocide, all any of these things. It's that's, you know, right. You, those who don't study it, history are doomed to repeat it. Right. It's really important that we remember that can happen. I don't want to get political here, but it always scared me when Trump was first in office, what he was doing to people in Mexico. I'm thinking right. I was thinking the same thing. Like like this is the beginning. If there wasn't cameras and you know,
all
it was
over
80
again.
Years ago,
right.
you know, this is,
yeah.
we're going
I've
towards that again.
To those,
so,
I've actually been to those borders, and I've actually seen them, immigrants in person. I've actually seen them.
Yeah.
And I'll just say really brief, it's not a pretty sight. But the
yep.
good thing that we are human, and humanitarianism is something that it's a good thing that in the end some of us practice and volunteer to do, such as I. When I do my volunteer work, I do with the immigrants, I go to the border and I give them what I can give with an organization that I work with.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Bobby, you've been unusually quiet. Sure.
No, I'm
Bobby,
I'm,
you've been
I'm,
unusually I'm, quiet, and I'm dying to hear what you have to say.
Wait,
she's not falling off her seat tonight. I know that for sure.
I'm listening to what everyone else has to say because I find it fascinating because everyone has their story, and we're hearing a little bit of Frank's and a little bit of Luya's tonight, and I really am enjoying that. It helps me know them as people, not simply as poets. I mean, that's important to me. As you will see in my book, I said I like to see the universe through other people's eyes. I'm very glad. I can't believe this is a pre-write. I mean, this is like, you know, made to order. The picture and the way it inspired you to select this particular piece that you already crafted, I think is just makes me very glad that I opened the Son of a Gun this afternoon to pre-write, because this is a stellar piece. I like the way you've done it in couplets. The way it reads, it has a weight to it, and the way you have structured it that makes you focus on each particular line and its individuality, and it tells the story with a lot of gravitas. And I do remember that. That's one of I have a list of films that I have seen that I'm very glad I've seen, and I will probably never watch again. Simply because they are so emotionally charged that I can barely get through them. That was one of them, 12 Years a Slave, Amistad. I watched a couple of times, but it's tough. And Schindler's List. They tear me up every time I watch those films, so I don't watch them very often. Yeah, but it's I'm glad I've seen them. I'm glad someone told those stories because I'm glad there's folks out there that do remember that they are part of a larger organism, a part of the world that aren't just about themselves. And there's, you know, what you have done to the least of my brethren, you have done to me.
Mm-hmm.
We don't. Often, you know, people blithely ignore that when you see people being cavalierly rude or thoughtless or self-consumed. They tend to forget they're not the only life form on the planet. And it's sad when you see people falling into that kind of bad behavior. So I guess it's incumbent to us, you know, as a fire team, all four of us, to go out there and right all those wrongs. So, no, seriously. Everything you can do as an individual.
I try.
I
give my best. I mean, I'm a philanthropist, as I said, so I try to do my best as I can. But, of course, it's only a small piece of what I could give.
I could give.
I'd rather give and hold on to things that I don't need in the end that others do. That's my motto in life.
Yeah, return it to the universe. I'm the same. And you've got a partner in crime here in Virginia, so I'm the same way.
Our generation, you know, we screwed it up, whatever we did. And whenever I go to high school or college graduations, whoever I'm there for, I say, all right, good job.
Yeah.
Go fix the world. We screwed it up. Go fix it.
Yeah.
You know, it's your
and we
job
say
now.
That to the next generation, don't we?
Exactly.
And they say it to the next generation, and it just recycles itself.
Saying is one thing, doing is another. And I've learned that sometimes it's our behavior that can speak more by giving. And, you know, and that's why I volunteer because, and exactly what, you know, we have so much in abundance. It is so better to give than to, you know, it's better to give than receive.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You know, on that note, Amy, a little while back in the chat said, It's also the culture of compliancy, which is awful. When we think it's normal just because how it is. And that is it, too, you know.
Yeah.
She's very, very right with that.
Yeah, that the old excuse about that's the way we've always done it, rubbish.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and if you do it out of kindness, you know, and that's, you know, even one of the things I've done, you know, it's just the simplicity of respect and kindness. And then you can always tell somebody when they say thank you, you can always say pass it on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of respect and kindness, we have another guest star on the line here.
Yeah, there we go.
No. Really? Who we got?
I think so.
We said
hello, everybody.
Careful.
Hi. Hey,
Bobby.
Hey,
Ray.
Ray.
All right.
Hey, Daniel.
We got a party now.
We got a party.
We got a party.
Absolutely. Did you get to hear or read Frank's poem?
Yeah, I read over it. It was quite staggering, the complexity of the write. You know, you really capture the man's life with beauty and grace. So, well done.
I'm
sure it was a great read as well.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah,
absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, now that
and,
you're here,
yes, I am going to put him to work in a minute, but first I'm going to put Lou to work because I just posted her poem so she can read hers.
Okay, all right. Thank you. And this is titled Gageui. We were labeled beasts. Red savages still, we gather at riverbank, ocean's moonlight sand, tree limbs drum, leaves whisper, remembrance it. Here on these land, we commemorate our mourning, genocide, theft of land, beauty of culture, obstacles continually challenge, worn moccasin paths, briny teardrops filling, ebony eyes as ancient dark sapphires seize, lost within songs of eagles, jeweled birds of breasted arias breathe, worn hands collect seashells, a flower appears, gifted by the forest, shadowed stag spirit, opening portals of innocent times. His gaze speaks, his antique burnished antlers, golden sunlight dances through emerald pine. Moments, recollecting moments, childlike laughter bubbles up, running towards scented cool winds. Legs, arms become muscular, deer as they transform, staring into his topaz. Citrine flex, life's heaviness, its sweet struggle ends, neath columns of father's trees, we lay in grassy bedding, communal healing, merging pathways, where there is peace, where there is Gageui, in poem.
Excellent, excellent read. Thanks, Lou. Before we get to the comments, did you want to say anything about this poem?
Yeah, this is the Cherokee word for love, and I'm talking about the whole, you know, the culture, the Holocaust, the hope and love and the spiritual needs of, you know, of Native Americans to honor our land and to honor the animal spirit. And, you know, we listen in the wind for our grandparents and father's words of wisdom. And it also talks about how we transform into the animal beings and where we find peace. And hopefully there will be more peace because we live in a world that has no respect for human, animal, or earth life, even the sea.
Amazing. That's beautiful. You know, I one comment I'll say, I've always used to say that our American culture is a lot of backwardsness to it and things wrong. And what we need to do is we need to get back to nature. We need to respect it. We need to work with it and study it. We need to all work for the common good to help each other instead of all individually trying to get our money. Our young people need to really be concentrating on learning and developing, and that's where their focus should be. And we should really respect elders instead of kind of almost shuffling them off like we do in our culture a little bit and learn from them because they're the ones that know. Well, culture is all those great things, Native Americans. How ironic is it that we came here and destroyed that of the – and that's actually what we need and we should go to. That's what I always said. So beautifully written. And, Gray, let's start with you. Comments?
Yeah, you know, the visuals are stunning and – the sentiment is touching. You know, you can feel the love that you have in your heart and your soul and where that love comes from. So just a beautiful write and read.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely great. Thank you. Yeah, and your read is great. You could really feel the passion in it that you had for this. Just one of my favorites you've ever written, I think. I've read this one before of yours. Beautiful. Frank, what are your thoughts?
You know, this poem really conjures deep emotions in me. You know, when I think about the genocide of Native Americans, and it was who perpetrated it, particularly Europeans and Spaniards and Soviet, it just tears my heart inside to know that, you know, Columbus called the first Arawaks Indians when they weren't. And the Europeans called the Native American people savages and beasts when they were not. It just thinks, you know, it just makes me think and ponder about how terrible, you know, you just said something there, Daniel, that I agree. I wish we could keep these stories, you know, and relive them, not to be condescending, not to criticize, you know, but to make people not forget. You know, just as with my poem, not to forget history and the lessons of history, because as what you said before, if you don't learn them, you're prone to repeat them. And this poem was so touching to me because it talked about the beauty of the culture, you know, with the natural ancient culture of the Native American people, in particular the Cherokee. I had a friend of mine who was a Native American, and I learned so much just being at his reservation and being around him. I learned what it is, what these people actually felt and their ancestors, their ancestral spirits, which just they evoke and they are so much spirited by. And so this poem, although it's so much full of beautiful metaphors that talk about the Native Americans' plight, I still feel that I'm reliving, although hundreds of years, so be it, the same plight of before of the Cherokee and what occurred to them. So I will say Adageyudi to you, Lou.
Oh, thank you.
Adageyudi. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, but I tried that. You're welcome.
Okay, you.
Beautiful comment.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome.
And everybody's saying that in there. Pam said that this poem deeply touches my heart. AR said, beautiful poem. So, excellent. Bobby.
Yesy.
What's happening?
I find myself not only thinking about Native Americans. I think of Wounded Knee, the Trail of Tears, those historic events, but it is so prevalent that one group of people tends to exercise what they feel is their supremacy over. I mean, look what the Brits did in India. They mm-hmm. walked into their country and took it over. I mean, it's like, damn.
Yeah, they did.
And they did that. I mean, there's colonies out and were loath to move out. I mean, look at the extreme measures it took
Gandhi and the rest of them to get home rule, and the Scots and the Brits and the Irish and the Brits. I'm beating up on the Brits tonight.
Go ahead.
The Spanish did it. The French did it. It's the Americans, you know, and you're right when you say this country is made up of two groups, indigenous and, you know, invaders, immigrants. And we tend to forget that, I think, unfortunately, when we go places, I tend to be deferential to wherever I am. I've lived in other countries, and I go out of my way, or I've visited other countries, I go out of my way to respect their customs,
their culture,
And when I lived in Japan for a year, I learned the language, I learned the customs. Everyone has their story, and to be contemptuous of a group of people simply because they're a different color, I get into a protracted philosophical debate with a friend the other day about gender bias, and I could not convince him. It was a little too abstract for him that sometimes something is neither right nor wrong; it simply is different. And unfortunately, too many people tend to frown on things that they are not accustomed to as being wrong, instead of simply being different.
Yep.
Once
I hear you.
Different, it opens your eyes to there's a whole world out there with the different cultures and beauty and languages and what have you, and you get to appreciate them more. And your story here of how your progenitors, their spiritual bond with their spirit animal guides and their cleaving to the earth. My grandmother had that reverence for nature and the earth, and it you can see it in a person. It's a remarkable thing. But I think this is a beautiful piece you've written here. I thank you so very much for sharing this with us, because this is a part of Americana that was left out of the artwork. So thank you for bringing this in.
Absolutely. Amy said, I mean, we Brits have done such awful things. We once charged Zanzibar for the bombs we used to bomb them in a two-day war. You know, all cultures have this, right? I mean, they really do. You know, we were talking about the slaves earlier, and who captured the slaves? Other Africans went out and captured Africans and to sell them.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading about a tribe in the Amazon who recently was wiped out by another tribe. The last guy from that tribe that was wiped out just passed away. It was like 10-20 years ago or something, and the last person left. You know, all cultures have that, unfortunately. But all cultures are very good.
It's a stain that we all have, unfortunately. No, I'm saying it's just a stain historically that most countries have. It's just a shame that we don't take the time to learn from those and take lessons from that as what we should not do. I think about the Moors and I think about the Jews in Spain and how atrociously with the Inquisition and all that. Perhaps I'm being off yet, but that does make me think about so many things, you know. So it does go from culture to culture. I don't think there is a culture that can save itself from these types of genocides or treatment. I think all cultures and all countries have something to hide under their sleeves in their past, in their history.
Yep, and luckily there's good people too, right? So you know, every culture has their good, you know, kind, compassionate people. So hopefully somehow that balances out, and hopefully we'll all grow from that a little bit. I'm actually seeing a lot of it in this next generation that my son is in. So I actually have hope for the future in some of the people I'm seeing now, believe it or not. Cool.
Just take them away from the phone for a bit there. 'Cause nowadays, kids are into the phone too much. Less of the books.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like quoting Homer Simpson. He the power went out, and he's like the phone was the TV's out, all this, and he goes, "Well, somebody turned something on. I'm starting to think." So that was one of my favorite. It's always one of my favorite Simpsons quotes. Anyways, speaking of thinking, I'm trying to get all the segues in. Gray, I'm going to put yours up. If you wouldn't honor us with that read, that would be great.
Sure, you bet. Okay, this is titled Dreamcatcher by Gray Eye Smith. Wet stones, hot inside the fire. Smoke streams, a turtle on the pyre. This is no man's land. Children of the Creator, hold deftly to his hand. Dreamcatcher's tangled web, bear no match against this dread. Current riptides, crimson red, old and young, lost in ebb. Voices gone, stories too, parchment now, inked in royal blue. Bear no truth to me and you. Battles lost, yet wars accrue. Little Indian, hear me now. Cast your stars, make your vow. Forget not the ways of old. Stand your ground. With bold and home.
Very good, Gray. Excellent. Thank you very much. Anything you want to say about your poem before we get started on the comments?
I was just reminded of this recently when it became a front page pick. So.
Well deserved. Perfect. Thank you. Lou, let's start with you.
Me?
Yes, please.
Did you?
Unless there's someone else with your name there.
This was a beautiful poem, Guy Gray Eyes. You know, what it means to me, you know, because, you know, they are weaved and made, you know, we all know to protect bad dreams, but what a lot of people don't know is that it also lets the good dreams, you know, pass through. And that's what I think with Gray Eyes is the dreams that were held by our ancestors are still held today. And that is something that he brings out when we're going through this modern time, you know, that we can't let the old and young get lost in this ebb. And this is, you know, something by word of mouth that is passed down, and hobbies, but not so much hobbies, but paintings and fan art as reminders of where we were and who we are now and where we will pass through. Beautiful, Gray.
Thank you, Lou. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent, Lou. Thank you very much. Frank, your turn.
Yes, this was a wonderful poem, Gray. I thought the sentiments expressed here were very empowering, and yet they were very visceral as well. I like the way you a total storyline here, you know, like a moral to the end of this piece here, when you talk about, you know, forget not the ways of old, stand your ground with bold. The first dream catcher that I actually ever saw was on a route I was going to Oklahoma. It was, I believe it was Choctaw Territory, or Cherokee, I'm not sure. And I didn't know what it meant until one of these individuals, a Native American, had actually given me the storyline of what it meant. And I've forever since then, I've always been drawn to dream catchers. And now that because I know what it means, something like this is so easily understood by me. The way I grasped this was just beautiful poem, beautiful sentiments, and I thought you did a great job, and congratulations on your front page pick. You deserve, and I think Lou as well sort of deserved as well. Great job. Great job on the speech.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, I agree. We get some great poetry tonight, as always. Bobby, what is going through that mind of yours? I mean about the poem. The rest of the stuff scares me. Just let's talk about the poem.
It's not
Yeah, exactly. This is a family breathing. Show, so let's keep the rest of the what's going on.
Yeah,
there
we go.
First off, I'm really glad that Frank and Gray Eyes and Lou, you all contributed their pieces to this. I'm glad I reached out, and I'm sorry I forgot you, Frank, but thank you for diving in. Anyway, appreciate that. Oversight, a little distracted today.
Yeah.
These two pieces, both of you have brought forward. You can tell that there's an ethnic pride there, and it's just so beautiful to see that pride in your progenitors and in your history and to be able to share it. And I really, Gray Eyes, from a technical point of view, you've got a beautiful piece here, got a great rhythm to it, very pleasing cadence. Another great show of assonance. You've done a web, dread, red, ebb. I mean, that second stanza, Dreamcatcher's tangled web, bear no match against this dread. Current riptides, crimson red, old and young, lost in the ebb. Great assonance, beautifully done, very, very skilled. The whole story, though, is just so touching. I mean, and the stanza that really got me is, voices gone, stories to parchment, now inked in royal blue. Bear no truth to me and you. Battles lost, yet wars accrue. And that speaks so loudly of history written by the victors, history written by the conquerors, history written by the people who think they won, and then it bearing very little resemblance to the actual truth. And I said that so remarkably. I really, really appreciate you sharing this with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. Great insight.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said, Bobby, you know, history written by the conquerors. That is really interesting. There's this book, I don't know if you all know, it's by a historian named Howard Zinn called The People's History, which is kind of all the dark side. It literally starts with, like, Columbus, talking about Columbus trying to commit genocide. It's just that kind of darker side of history, but it's very, very interesting and important. So, again, A People's History by Howard Zinn.
You know that people should do some research on Columbus, and you would find his story, his personal story, you know, and he wasn't that celebrated of a man, or was he really that great of a man? But if I can ask really quick, Gray, if I can ask you just one question, how is in Canada, how are you, do they, how is the view, the education there towards Native Americans when, you know, do they teach you this in primary school and that? I mean, is it, I'm just curious about that, I can ask really quickly.
Yeah, no, there's not a whole lot of it, no.
No, it isn't. Sorry to hear that, my friend. I was curious to know about that. I've been to Canada once, and that was Quebec. But I didn't find many natives there in Quebec, so I thought I'd ask you what the education is towards the history of the Native American people there.
Yeah, it's not very studied.
Sorry to hear that, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, is it? I don't know about the history nowadays in school. I don't think it still is much in the United States, unfortunately, either. So something we definitely need to fix.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah,
so. Go ahead,
Luke. I was just going to make a small comment that in Santa Fe, they have built their own school, and they're teaching the five native languages and cultures and celebration, and you know, especially for the young ones, where they're also learning the languages that they were silenced by so many religious groups. Which I'm not going to point out which one, but.
Interesting. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. All right, we will continue on. I don't know if Pee-wee's still on the board, but I'm going to read Pee-wee's. Mm-hmm. I don't think I've got to read yet today, so I will read Pee-wee's. This is called A Storm, and it's on Prompt 24, anybody following along. Wasn't anything but another day in the corn-covered heartland of the USA. Little brother Jess and I had just gotten home from school and didn't really have much to say. Weather had been holding up good, though, especially for the late September out here on the plains. We made up a sandwich, went out to feed the calves. That's when I heard it start to rain. Jess looked over at me and he said, "Ben, that sky just doesn't look right. It doesn't look at all right." Boy, he was right. That wasn't right at all. I told him to go see if he can find Uncle Ike. Kind of a strange yellowish hue in 1 second, but then it commenced to be in dark as night. Breathing started to feel a mite funny, yet enough so that I knew it was gonna be a sight. Then came the howling winds. Only thing I can think to relate is the sound of a train coming up out of nowhere, and then a barren right down on you, that locomotive's freight. Never much thought myself, an idiot, I just prayed that Jess was smart enough to know if you're in Kansas and all the winds come on as such, it's time to get to the cellar for show. Feet are running fast as they could to the house. That's when all hell broke loose on the farm. Horses out running around cattle, fences all down, flying round the sky at the top of the barn. As I rounded the corner, I saw the doors open. Doors of the old cellarway down to the basement. Jess and Ike were on their way down, and I dove on in behind pulled doors shut to look like placement. Just the three of us there, that wasn't good, but I tried to reassure her because Jess was really scared. Reckon Tuesday Ma and Pa had went to, into town, which was good with these skies, maybe stay there. So as we sat down in that dank old basement, just me and my little brother and good old Uncle Ike, tomorrow we would be working like slaves at best, picking up, tore down. Now we settled in for the night. End poem. Excellent job, Pee-wee. Thank you very much. Gray, let's start with you.
You did a fantastic read on this epic poem about a storm, and, you know, I liked the intro. It wasn't anything but another day in the corn-covered heartland of USA. And then, you know, he goes on, and, you know, the sound of the howling winds coming on like a locomotive is harrowing for sure. And then to find the shelter of the basement was wonderful at the end. So a beautiful storyline.
Yeah, you know, there's hurricanes and floods and all kinds of things over the world, but there's kind of nothing like a tornado, and certainly nothing like a tornado in the plains. Ridiculously violent storms. Thanks, Gray. Excellent comment. Frank, let's go to you.
Yeah, this poem actually made me recall one of my favorite series as a child. That was Little House on the Prairie, Ma and Pa, and Laura Ingalls. This was just remarkable. I mean, the way he narrated this was uniquely impressive here with the rhyming scheme here as well. But I thought it flowed naturally here. He didn't press it, I didn't feel. He threw in some lingo in there as well. I think it's relatable to where he's from, the area he's from, the States. But I thought the whole notion of the storm, the way he encompasses this poem, with just that natural outlook of what a storm was and what it is in, you know, in the rural areas, which you said before, there is nothing comparative to, I do agree, to a tornado. I've actually been in one, fortunately, and there is nothing to be admirable. But I thought the poem, once more, was just very creative as well, and I thought he did a fantastic job of epitomizing what it is, the essence of a storm and how one deals with it in the rural areas of America.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like the little slang he did in there too, just to kind of give it that feel of of being there. I thought that was great.
I thought you were going to wrap it there for a moment there, Daniel.
Yeah, no, can't do that. You don't want to hear that. Yeah.
Hey.
So where are we? We did Gray. I'm thinking who we get. I'm like losing it. It's getting late. Louie, we haven't done you yet, right? Let's go with you.
No. You know, God, I just love the way you read this. I loved his rhyming seeing, you know, I was telling him in the comment that, you know, you see them black clouds coming. And what I liked about the picture was that the vision, you know, it was, you know, of course, they didn't want the trains because they couldn't graze the cattle, and the land was being taken over by farmers and, you know, an industry, modern industry that was coming in and slowly being built. You know, I just love this, and being the Howlin', the only thing I can think to relate is the sound of a train coming up out of nowhere and then bearing right down on you, that locomotive straightening this course. This one never much thought of myself as an idiot. I just prayed that Jeff was smart enough to know if you're in Kansas and them winds come on, as such, it's time to get to the cellar show, you know. And, you know, he captured all those different images in the picture, how the division of lands for oil, for building, modernization was fighting against the old ways of farming, the old ways of life, and raising piglets and, you know, raising grain. And, you know, it's just, he captured it all. He really did. I could just hear that train, but more than anything, I heard that tornado coming. And, of course, that's when you head to the cellar.
That was the opposite. I never stoned have one.
You hit into the, you go into the, yeah, I remember that tornado and the Wizard, Alan, oh my God, what was it?
Wizard of Oz?
Now, yes.
There you go.
Yeah. You just don't forget the sound of any of these things. It becomes part of our life. And I really liked it. And that rhyme scheme and your reading was just fabulous.
You know, Pee-wee gets better and better. He does a great job with his rhyme and his narration, I think. Now, you are a woman of the world, Bobby. Have you ever seen a tornado? I'm curious.
I've lived through a couple.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Where I grew up, it was called Tornado Alley in Illinois. And I remember,
Oklahoma.
One day, well, yeah, that too. Yeah, there's certain areas of the country, and they did come barreling through. And I remember being up in my upper floor bedroom and looking out. When I went to my parents' bedroom, I looked out the window and I saw the black funnel cloud moving across the landscape. And I remember when, I think it was 1967, we had one that was so bad it tore the top of a high school gymnasium off, and killed a bunch of the students in there. And my dad, he said, I want you to see this. And he took me to a neighborhood that was probably about a 15, 20-minute drive from where our home was. It was called Hometown, a little housing development. And it had flattened just house after house after house, and then it capriciously skipped one house and then danced across the street and flattened that bit. And it was weird because you'd see one house completely unfazed, and then the surrounding homes were just, they were just decimated. And I never would have believed the kind of force. I've also lived through a typhoon when I was in Okinawa. That typhoon hit the island, and we could see the seawall from our apartment. We were on the third floor, and we're watching the typhoon take the palm trees and bend them to the ground. A freight train constantly going by the house for hours and hours because it was shaking. So the wind was shaking so bad. So yeah, so it's really those kind of weather conditions. I mean, people that capriciously just go, I'll just ride this out.
Ride the tornado.
Yeah. You know, bon chance, because you know, I don't think people realize the awesome force of nature
And yep. The people that aren't that attempt to his oven, you usually end up on the fuzzy end of the lollipop on that one. But this, I Pee Wee's work. I mean, this piece, great storytelling. I like that his style is colloquial in this because it does have the storytelling flavor to it. The little colloquialisms. Goodville especially from late September, going to be a site. It tends to give it a very homespun feeling. And the fact that he did do a lot in with that is very impressive. So this is a great piece. I really enjoyed the storytelling. I enjoyed the fact that his interpretation of the two prompts, because he pulled two prompts out of there. And he's definitely captured the sense of the aftermath of the storm, or actually riding through it. So well done, Bob. Well done, Kyle. Well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. My only tornado story is we were getting tornado warnings around here in Massachusetts, believe it or not, every once in a while. And I was watching the news, and I'm seeing it, and they're showing the funnel cloud. And I'm looking at it, and I'm not making this up. I'm like, oh, my God, that's my house. Like, it was over the rotation.
Oh.
I'm like, what the? So I ran outside and looked
up.
I'm like, is there a tornado here? It didn't do anything. I mean, it was just rotation. It went away. So nothing happened. But I was like, the center of the rotation was like right above our house. I'm like, what is – there's too much stuff here. There's too many I really got nothing. Nothing happened. But it was – there. Every once in a while we get rotation. Every once in a great while in Western Mass when we'll touch down for like 2 minutes because there's too much stuff, it just dies, you know what I mean? We get rotation sometimes.
You reminded me of something that my dad told me. He was actually driving home during one, and he says you stopped at a traffic light because he didn't want to contribute to the chaos. And he said that he looked over and all of a sudden the tornado dropped a roof on the car right next to him.
Wow.
It's like, holy shit, I better get home. You know? Yeah, he's
I'm really glad.
Oh, my God.
That was a come to Jesus.
Yeah, I'm really glad we really don't get them around here. That's good. Like I said, every once in a while, Western Mass, they'll drop for a minute, and then they disappear because they just, they run into too many things. It's not like the out west where it's just this blank canvas, right, for them to go. So we don't get them that often, but anyway, cool. Let's continue on here. And, I think, Frank stepped out for a little bit. So,
no, I'm here.
Lou. Oh, you are here. Oh,
yeah.
All right. Well, okay. Your punishment for leaving is you got to read the next poem. How's that? That's what you get. This is by Thomas V.
It's called What a Winter Without Life, and it goes like this. Snow's a revelation, water's precipitation. Can be rain, give it a little dust. A place to gather, like a bar gathers, until it is so heavy. The elbow can't raise another glass, and it tumbles down. The winds of chance can blow it up, a drunk finding feet to sway. Gather courage, only to fall down again. The hail, say, flies, depends on the updraft. The fall and the weight being greater than rescue, unless a bacteria is attached to the stray storm that rose into the clouds, this microbe rider taking a flight to another more fruitful land, finds a chill setting over the cabin before drinks are served, and then all that's available is water. This water allows our friendly creature a creative moment. Suddenly water discovers crystal shapes unlocked, fractal realizations summarized and set free. Life gives form to water. It finds there is more than ice cubes wrapped in a glass. Sleet, ice, and sleets. Super chilled rains dragging down lines, the pond in stones of hail shattering glass. From the granular lust of Skyr's powder to the lovely cascading butter flakes. Melting dreams upon a young child's tongue. Life make beautiful the frozen scenery of a winter's bleak desert. Give the sun a chance to sparkle, along white visions reforming the landscape, a place to play, throw snowballs, build snowmen, forts, slide on hills on sleds, cardboard boxes, brooms turned into magic vehicles, snow, snow, snow. The elephant's life, geared, dynamic. End of poem.
Excellent read as always, Frank. I appreciate it. I love when scientific stuff is made poetic. I try to do it all the time myself. So I had a quick conversation with Tom about this, and he said, I read an article in Scientific American. They had discovered that for snow to form, you need certain bacteria to be on the dust to show the water how to crystallize in the right shapes.
Mm-hmm.
Without the bacteria, you get sleet, hail, or freezing rain. Life gives shape and meaning to things. I never heard that before, so that was fascinating to me. So, excellent. Gray, let's start with you.
You know, the fact he managed to put a science lesson in this is just astounding. I mean, the whole race is visceral and engaging, but to find the lesson that a certain microbe needs to be present for snow to form the crystals is fascinating to me. I liked learning something, so I appreciate that. Excellent read, Frank.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Gray. And, you know, like I said, I learned something, too. I really did not – I either knew it and forgot completely, or I didn't know that before. So that was very interesting. And he's totally right. You know, life – I mean, we kind of talked about it earlier, Lou, right, that, you know, respect nature, right? Life, you know, microbes and all this stuff, it's that balance of nature that we need. You know, when the snow is part of the springtime, in my opinion, that snow piles up, it all melts, and it gives that extra water to all the plants that need it in the springtime. It's all part of a plan, and we need to respect that. Lou, let's go with you.
Now, this was just a fabulous poem. I enjoyed it. Rob, Frank, you did a wonderful read. I really loved the ending stanza. That was my favorite. You know, because there's, you know, snow is seen different from children than it is from the older ones, you know, because you got to go out there and chop the wood to make sure you got enough to last you through the winter, especially up in Maine. You know, the animals, you got to make sure they eat all the work that you've got to collect, you know, to feed the animals during the wintertime because, you know, there's no sun. And, you know, just when I was living in Germany, I lived in Bavaria. And I used
to smell,
I didn't smell them honey wagons that carried the urine and excrement. And then we lived out in the farmland. And one of my friends that was there, she told me that they used it to enrich the vegetables out in the field because it rained so much it would take some of the vitamins out of there, so they would put it right back in with dumping the stuff out there. And let me tell you, at least in the wintertime, I didn't have to smell manure.
I can imagine what that's the farmer's manure were like then. Well, you didn't need perfume then, no?
Oh, yeah. Well, walking in the wheat field had a different meaning. So the beautiful sun and the swaying wheat and the smell of...
I can imagine your face afterwards.
Yeah. Well, you know, you learn to respect it. You know, you kind of get used to it when, you know, because you ain't got no choice. But I smiled when he wrote here, the broom turned into magic vehicles, and right away I thought of that honey wagon.
Yeah, like you said about the, you know, difference between a child and adult. I was in the last show I was doing, I was telling Pam there was this ad I always remember that said, you know, everybody thinks this is New England winter and this is just really picturesque, like farmland of Vermont, and nice little snow going down. They go, but we know it's this, and it's this guy sitting in a parking lot with this blowing horrible snow with a scraper trying to get his car going. I'm like, yes, that is what snow does. I'm all set if I never have to shovel again. But you know, it's I like it. It's beautiful, but yeah, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. Frank, you got to read it. What you think?
Well, first of all, I think in 20 years I've only seen snow four times, and every time I've seen it, I've learned to appreciate it more. I thought it was fascinating as well. I too learned something from this poem. I didn't realize when it condenses and how it actually, you know, what leads up to the buildup of snow itself and how it, you know, hardens and or actually how it forms. I thought he did a fantastic job on the personification as well of the prompt there. His metaphors are striking as always. He has a wonderful pin, a quill, I would say, when he pins right. And I like that whole notion here of what the raw, you know, that raw, what's the word there, the raw facet of what I would say the drudgery that takes place when you do this, you know, shovel snow in, you know, back in those days as well, in the 1800s, they had to find a way to shovel, particularly these places that were heavy, set with snow, you know. I've never really have seen that too much here where I'm at, but I imagine that must have been painful at one time, but it also gave a bit of relief as well. Because snow, although it seems like you're shoveling and you're doing labor, it also, you know, it gives you this rewarding feeling as well, you know, because you can go out and, you know, play with it, be a child. So there's always good and a positive and negative to winter as it is with snow. So I thought you did a fantastic job.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Absolutely. There is a, you know, around here in New England, we'll have 3-foot snowstorms, and 2 hours later, everybody's driving around because we're just, you know, we're ready for it, right? But some places,
yeah, no, we're not ready here.
Yeah, no, you get on the south, and there's an inch of snow, and the whole place just shuts down, like in Atlanta.
Exactly.
Like, nobody knows what to do. Whereas I have at least 6 shovels in my shed, even though there's only 2 people that live here. I got snow blowers. I got piles of sand. And we're not even close to places like Canada, you know, and other places. They get way worse. I mean, I've talked to some of my friends in Canada that already have like 2 feet of snow. I think there was six Whoa. Feet off of the there was just 6 feet or 8 feet or something of snow in Buffalo off of the Great Lakes.
And they were having heart attacks shoveling it. There's all kinds of stories in the news.
Yeah. Some of the, it's totally true. I will take 12 feet of fluffy snow over 4 inches of heavy, wet crap. It's just, it's the war. It is. When it's like 34 degrees and it's snowing and it piles up, you're basically lifting water is what you're doing. It's craziness.
Would you not prefer a snow cone?
Snow cones, I
guess. Of course.
Yes, those are good. Those are good.
There you go. We can end the night with that thought.
All right, Bobby, I have two jobs for you. First of all, we have 4, besides some of the extra ones you put on here, which we were worried about not having enough poetry. We have 4 carryovers. So if you wanted to make so we'll do those next week. If you wanted to make a quick comment and then talk about our next contest.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes, we'll do those carryovers. Our show, which is going to be, drum roll, 10 December. Good God. It's the paper towel roll. It's the paper towel theory of time. You know, the closer you get to the end, the faster it rolls out. Our next cut, we have an ongoing test, which we have a whopping 1 entry on right now, holding down the fort. But it is the whimsical gauche of Bill Mayer, and it's a gauche actually is, and I'm probably mispronouncing it here, gouache, is opaque watercolor, but you have got to see the artwork. I mean, they are absolutely charming. They've got some great images in here. My favorite is the mouse in a Tudor gown holding a cheese knife or a cheese fork, and it says cheese ball. But there's some great ones, and you got animals in uniform there's one in there for you, Frank. I dare you to find it. I think you know which one it will be, though. You can take one look at it. And
you've
got to be. But
well, you send me the picture there. You
send me the fun images in there. There's some really fun images in there, and I'm hoping that folks are just overcome with events because of Thanksgiving just being behind us now, and that they'll roll back to this and realize that we've got another contest going. And after this, the one that we're doing a contest, or we're doing a show on. Let me roll forward here. We're 24 December. Do you believe it? We got a show on Christmas Eve. Hot diggity. And the artwork I have found is just eye popping. It is with the season. It's a male artist, and we've got Santas and angels and saints in there, and just gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. And I can't wait to put the contest together. So anyway, for the folks that didn't hear the news, I'm finally in print. My book is out. And Dan has one already, bless his heart.
I have a copy. It's really interesting. It's very diverse. There's lots of different poems in here. I recommend
it's
it. It's great. I got it today and started reading.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's eclectic, but it's deliberately so, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to call people's attention to things that they tend to get inured to every day. The things that they say every day that they don't think about, like their coffee or their pillow or their ceiling, So of course you're going to find things in there about pancakes.
Are you going to put it in audio format? Are you going to make it into an audio format afterwards?
I don't know. I that's the first time I've heard that question. I hadn't really thought about it.
I'm sure people would like to hear that, Bobby.
All right. Well, something for me to think about while I'm working on my
next
volume. Anyway, folks, thank you so much for joining us this evening. You made it special. So thank you, Luyu and Frank and Gray Eyes. And Dan, thank you as always for your stellar job. And I'm going to go get a cup of tea
and
go to bed.
Great show. You have fantastic conversations tonight, everybody. I really appreciate it. Awesome show.
Yeah.
Everybody, peace and happiness. And go respect nature and all that we talked about. And we'll all see you later.
Yeah,
go grab
we don't want to live in
a
death hole.
Have a snowcone.
Snow,
yes, absolutely.
Fantastic show, Bobby.
Take care.
Loved it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great night.
Good night, all.
Awesome.